Fourth and final hour here on this sunny Thursday afternoon, at least down south of town here in Rutherford County in Smyrna. Hopefully it's sunny in your neck of the woods. We've had a really, really good show today, fast moving, and we're going to continue that here in the final hour. We're going to start by heading over to St. Thomas Sports Park and hearing from Titans head coach Mike Vrabel talk about their next opponent, the Cincinnati Bengals and Joe Burrow, them getting out of town for the first time in a good while. So with all that being said, this is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors of Nashville. Here's head coach Mike Vrabel.
Tim, let me say this. I wanted to tell everybody how happy I was to tell the team about Kevin Byard being the Walter Payton recipient for the Titans. That is a special honor. That's something that I know that our guys hold in high regard, similar just to the service that they do and the care for others. So just was excited to be able to tell the team that and then honor Kevin in front of the team. So I wanted to share that with you guys as well.
And I guess my follow will just be on that. Just what do you like about what you see from Kevin on a day-to-day basis, not only as a pro in the locker room, but maybe how he handles himself in the community?
Well, I think that's the total package, Jim, that we're striving for, that all of us are striving for, to have some balance in our families, in our personal life, our professional life, and then also what we're able to do to impact other people around the community. And I know that's something that you know, Kevin – you know, has done a lot of. Was watching the game the other night, you know, and just saw Jalen Ramsey and making a $1 million donation to a school here in Nashville that had made an impact either on him or will continue to make an impact on youth. I just, you know, that was something I didn't know about until I saw that. And so I know that there's a lot of guys that are doing a lot of really good things with the resources that they've been blessed with.
Hey, Coach, glad to hear you're in a good mood since I haven't talked to you in a while. Just want to ask you about
We don't need to make a huge deal about it, John. It's only for today.
Gotcha. Just want to ask you about Jeffrey Simmons' continued development. How much has he evolved as a playmaker and a leader for your defense?
I think he's one of those guys that are kind of – you're hoping that – and I think we're all excited that he is going to become, you know, one of those guys that you look out here and will be with us for a long time. Will eventually be a captain. You know, the impact that he makes on people around him. You know, he's a special person, and so you just love having him in the building. Love coaching him. You know, you talk to him. He's just his maturity level in just his second year is great.
If I could follow real quick, just his ability for someone as big and strong as he is to have the awareness to get his hands up and kind of, you know, bat down passes and stuff like that. Have you ever seen somebody his size be able to do that on kind of a consistent basis?
He's got really good awareness. And I think that's, you know, he's taken the coaching. I think, you know, we all want to impact the quarterback and we want to get sacks and quarterback hits. And, you know, Jeff has, you know, kind of realized like if he's not going to get there or maybe, you know, they stop him or they're double teaming him to get into the throwing lane. And, you know, even on the one that he batted that Jayon caught, like he jumped, like he wasn't just standing there. Like he was able to get up off the ground and, you know, impact the throw and end up being a huge play for us in the game. So I think that's just something that they're working on. I know that you know, Big T works with those guys, obviously, about, you know, technique and fundamentals and just being able to find ways to affect those throws that come inside.
Yeah, Mike, as you look back on some of the issues you guys have had on third down defensively, what's kind of been the common theme for that? Has it been – you know, something you guys aren't doing, something the other guys are doing? I mean, it's kind of gone wrong there.
You know, we look at the self-scout. There's a lot of different things that are showing up, you know, and it's zone, it's man, it's different. It's different down in distances. You know, so we just need to continue to work, focus, you know, make it an awareness. You know, we're working it today. You know, to get 11 guys to execute the call, whichever one that may be, working together with somebody. You know, if you're a man and you have to combo, you've got a pass rush game, or you've got a, you know, place where you need to be, getting there and being able to find ways to win, winning the rush and being able to challenge or to break. You know, we're close. You know, I know that doesn't mean anything, but when you're tackling them at the sticks or you know, you get up there on third and four and you got a zone and they try to run a man beater and you know, the receiver is able to fall forward for an extra yard. Or, you know, they again, it's just challenging and making sure that we're sticks awareness and we have an idea of what they're trying to do based on the formations that they're coming out in and how we could impact the quarterback.
You mentioned formations they're coming out in. The Bengals, as you mentioned yesterday, a lot of empty sets. With that spacing and those series of in-breaking routes that they run, what does that do with the defense? Like, how do you have to defend that?
Well, again, you have to play inside out. You have to play to your leverage sometimes. You know, they'll pivot back out and, you know, they're in empty some, you know, third down. That's something that shows up. Not a ton. You know, I mean, I would say that more empty shows up on normal down and distances, Teron. But again, we'll have to be prepared for it whenever. Usually that the rush comes out, you know, what check are we making? Are we playing the call? So, you know, they like to see what the picture looks like for the quarterback. And, you know, sometimes he'll check those routes to what they want to get into.
And then with the quick back shoulder throws that Burrow is hitting with A.J. Green, what's the coaching point for your corners to defend it?
Well, you know, we talk about playing the ball. You know, I mean, we talk about not looking back till you're in phase. And Malcolm had a close one. You saw, you know, it was an emphasis last week about, you know, playing the ball down the field. And I don't think he was in bad position. Unfortunately, I think what everybody and what I would like them to do and make it consistent throughout the league is that, you know, if you're not playing the football, that your margin for error goes way down. So I think that one, you have to play the football. Well, the other thing that comes up with that, Teron, is when you play the football and you look back, you know, sometimes there is a little bit of a hand that gets put on you and the ball is thrown, you know, on that back shoulder. So that's the game you play, you know, with them and those routes down the field. I think being challenged, finishing, you know, I think one thing that we talked about was being able to finish. Ward had one last week in the end zone, looked like a touchdown, and, you know, he continued to fight and finish through it and knock the football out, which I think A.J. Green thought it was a touchdown, and, you know, Ward finished. So, you know, that would be a huge emphasis.
Mike, Khalif Raymond only has 3 fair catches on punts this year. Have you guys encouraged him to be aggressive in making that decision, or is that just his natural approach to the job?
I think that's his natural approach to life. I think he's been, when you've been cut as many times as Khalif has and you played at a small school, you've got an edge to you that, you know, you want to be aggressive. And, you know, I think he's, you know, again, the kickoff last week is something that we have to clean up and make sure that we're all on the same page. But he is, his aggressiveness has been good. I mean, they're protecting those guys a little bit now. I think that those guys are protected with the defenseless receiver. That was a new rule that they added this year. That may have given him a little bit of comfort to be able to catch those and to try to do something with it.
What's your sense of how difficult a decision that is for a guy in terms of whether or not to fair catch or not and how much time you have to do that?
You know, it's fast, it's violent. I think that there's just a clock that goes off in your head. You know, I think that they take a peek. But I think that there's also a trust factor that goes into it with our vice guys, with our holdup guys. And we have, at times when we're performing, done a pretty good job with those guys to make sure that they're not down there in his face. To hit a big return, you're going to have to make one of those guys miss, you know, and to break a tackle or two. So we have given him some space, and hopefully that's increased his confidence level in catching those things.
You do such a good job with the timeouts at the end of the game. I had asked you about the one on Monday. You only used one at the end of Denver. Jacksonville, you didn't need them. Minnesota, you didn't need them. Then you get to the end of the Houston game, you need the penalty and you need all 3 of them. Strategically, are you just busting it to have them in case and then, you know, some situations you don't need them at all and some situations you need them plus something creative?
Right. I think we talk about this all the time, our operation and our ability to not have to waste those in the second half, of how critical they are, and showing the team how critical they are. You know, when the New Orleans Saints have 6 seconds and one timeout at the 50-yard line, and they go down timeout and win the game, you know, that sends a great message to the team how critical they are. It came up last week in the Buffalo game. There was 7 seconds again, one timeout before half, and Buffalo executed the down timeout against the Jets. And, you know, we'll show those guys that play tomorrow. And so then I have to make a decision. Okay, we're getting down on the play clock. You know, what's the down and distance? What are the probabilities that this drive is going to lead to points? Do I burn a timeout knowing how critical they have been in the past and in the end of the game for us?
Mike, how much is being able to have Derek and the work he's put in the passing game, how much is that making the offense itself more well-rounded in two-minute and third-down situations?
Well, he works hard at catching the football, and we have to try to get him the ball more. You know, I mean, I think you just try to get all your, you know, skilled players or guys that can do something with the football in their hand. Derek's got a unique skill set, and you know, it didn't work out for us last week. We, you know, weren't able to get the guy blocked, and then give them credit. They hugged up on there. We just, you know, we thought it, you know, you don't call them, you know, I mean, you don't call the plays thinking they're not going to work, but, you know, hopefully we can get that guy blocked and get him running in man coverage when everybody else is kind of tied up with their guy. So he works hard at it. He's working hard at identifying the protection and being able to step up in there and do that for us as well.
Mike, you made the comment, I think, on Wednesday that, you know, with some of the things on defense, one guy coming back, if that's a Dory or anyone else, isn't going to, you know, magically fix everything. When you have a situation where it is more than just one guy or more than one problem, I guess, what do you do to go about fixing that? Is there a spark you look for? What is the process like there?
I mean, I don't know maybe necessarily that I meant that it won't do anything or it's a bunch of problems. I mean, there's a lot of really good stuff in there. And that's what I keep looking at, keep coming back to the consistency to try to do that just longer. You know what I mean? Being able to sustain some of those consistent plays that you look out there and you say, you type into the comments, looks like defense, looks like defense, looks like defense, executing the keys, or, you know what I mean, just those things. And then the breakdowns, or, you know, when they make a play, you know, is it, did you just get beat or did you miss a tackle? Did we have a mental error? Did we not execute? And if so, why? And making sure that, you know, again, our communication, the details and the decisions, you know, we talked a lot about the decisions that we make out there at every level, my decisions, the players' decisions, these split second decisions that you're faced with during the course of a game, that we all have to make, and that we have to continue to try to strive to make better ones.
What causes a lack of consistency?
You know, Luke, I think that, you know, I think it could be a lot of things. It's, you know, when you're, you know, trying to get into a similar routine, trying to focus. And then we're focusing on practicing better today. We're focusing on, you know, making sure that when we go out there on every third down, that it's not just another rep, that it's a third down rep that's going to make the difference in the game. And that's what I told him this morning. And that's what I'm going to tell him, you know, when we start practice at noon.
Mike, has Taylor had surgery yet? And how do you want guys to handle things after they've had a procedure as far as staying around, maybe support their teammates, and or just do they need to just focus on rehab?
Well, again, that's Taylor's situation to talk about, Jim. You know, those guys are part of what we're doing. Sometimes they rehab here. Sometimes they rehab at other places. I have not seen Taylor yet. I've talked with him, but you know, I'll just let each guy handle their own, you know, injury situation with regards to that. But, you know, he'll certainly, you know, he's certainly missed, and I'm imagining that he'll be back around here fairly soon. I did want to mention one thing. I know that I think Chris asked me about maybe we talked about penalties. So last year for the entire season, regular and postseason, there were 732 offensive holding calls. This year through whatever week we're in, there have been 188. So anybody that's good at math, you know, extrapolate that out. And I think that it's probably going to be glaring that it's, that they're not calling as many.
A much more talkative Mike Vrabel, Titans head football coach, today in all of our press conferences, brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors of Nashville. We'll break some of the things that we heard from that down. Plus, there's some news out of Major League Baseball that we'll hit when we come back. But first, it is my time to tell you about BetMGM Sports. It's almost here, people. It's about to happen. They are coming soon to Tennessee. They're the same people that you see on the Las Vegas Strip with their hotels and casinos and sports books. They're offering real money wagering on a state-of-the-art app that's easy to use and features all of your favorite sports. You can bet on anything, football, whether it's the NFL or college, basketball coming up, racing like I like to do. It's all going to be there. Find out why BetMGM is the king of sportsbooks with parlay bonus payouts, in-game wagering, boosted odds specials, daily promotions, and much more. Every time you make a wager, you'll earn credits and M Life Rewards. That's the exclusive loyalty program of MGM Resorts. It is that easy. They will have all the big games for you. Be among the first fans in the state to download the BetMGM sports app coming soon to Tennessee. BetMGM will be offering sports betting from professional football to college basketball, like I said. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years or older. Must be present in Tennessee for problem gambling support. Call the Tennessee Red Line at 800-889-9789.
Thank you, Sean. We agree. Nashville SC, they will take on Chicago Fire FC this Saturday night at Nissan Stadium. I say Saturday night, 7:30 p.m. Catch all the action on ESPN 94.9. Pre-game coverage at 7:15. What's the significance of that for Nashville SC? Not really much. They don't have to get a win to be in. Well, there, you're right. They're still
seeding.
They're still seeding. So then what do we call it? Was this a qualifying game? You know, that's what they did in the NHL. Qualifying game for a seeding. They're in.
They're in.
They're in. Because last night, two teams lost, and it pushed Nashville SC into the MLS playoffs in their inaugural year. Wow. Pretty impressive. So now, yes, they are playing for seeding, and... But it was nice to see. It was at Atlanta, and who else lost?
Miami.
Miami. Yeah, Miami and Atlanta lost, and that pushed Nashville SC in. So still a big game Saturday night at Nissan Stadium. So I hope either you will be there or you'll be listening on ESPN 94.9. Mm-hmm.
Halloween night. Gonna
Congratulations to Nashville SC.
Yeah, very, very cool. And they also released yesterday and I'm not entirely sure how all this works, but I believe each team has like a nominee for, you know, end of the year awards, and then they narrow it down. But I know that there has been a lot of chatter about Gary Smith potentially being coach of the year, and the job that he's done to go from, you know, I mean, he's been helping to build this for the last 3 years, coaching USL and working with Mike Jacobs, the GM, and now moving up to MLS. He certainly should be in consideration for it, if not win it altogether, with the job he's done this year. So it's been cool, and still got three games to go before they get to the playoffs, but going to be awesome that they're going to be in.
I hope they can move up. I think they've still got a shot. If they can get to sixth, then that keeps them from having to do the play-in games, or the two out of three, to get to the conference quarterfinal, the final eight, if you will. So that's the immediate goal. Did you guys happen to see the video that they released about the new stadium, which I know is not top of mind right now, but it is a really cool computer rendition with a lot of detail on the clubs and what they're going to look like and where the press box is going to be, what the concourses will look like outside the stadium. It'll get you pumped up. You know, it really, because they've done such a great job of building the groundwork for a fan base already. And when they open that thing, I just think it's going to be a great atmosphere from day one.
No, where did you see this?
They put it out. Nashville SC. If you go to their Twitter, yeah, it's about a 3.5 minute video that they've put out there.
I'm going to watch that.
It's
for
cool.
Sure.
It is cool. So they've checked a lot of the boxes on how you build it, and you know we talked to Tony Husband, one of their announcers yesterday. I think they're to be commended on how they've picked their team. Right? There's a whole world of soccer players out there. Right? You're literally going to every corner of the globe to find the best, however many you have, 20 something guys to get on there and try to win. They've done a great job of team building. You know, they've spent money where they wanted to spend it. They've made the right choices. I don't think you could be happier with how they've built it, despite all of the things that were out of their control that were thrown at them.
Yep. We're happy for Gary Smith, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's where it starts, right?
He's been great to deal with, and he's done a fantastic job, whether it was USL, now moving into MLS, and we're happy that things are going well for Gary Smith. And once again, congratulations to Nashville SC for punching their ticket into the MLS playoffs in their first year. Speaking of congratulations, how about this MLB hire? The Chicago White Sox have found their guy.
I know. I would, when I saw it on the crawler on ESPN, during Mike Vrabel, I go, whoa!
So if people haven't seen this and they're listening to this right now and hearing it for the first time, what do you think's racing through their head? Like, how could they be, you know, talking about a Chicago White Sox hire like this? Who in the world? What do you think people would say if they haven't seen anything and they don't have no clue what we're talking about? You know, what do you think they would think? What's like the first thought that would pop into like a baseball fan's mind of why would they be making such a big deal about the White Sox hiring their new skipper? Like, why are they talking like that? So who are they talking about? What do you think a name that would pop in their head?
Ozzie Guillen.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that could be one. Just because he won the World Series with them. Frank Thomas. The Big Hurt.
Michael Jordan.
Very nice.
Shoeless Joe Jackson.
These are no that
Ray
one
Liotta.
Didn't pop in the
Ray Liotta.
Ray Liotta. Willie has struck something with his guesses. He's done a good job.
I mean, I'm trying
These are all very good guesses to throw out there to get people's attention. That those names should pop in people's mind. Who was it? Steve Lyons who dropped his pants at first?
Psycho Lyons, yeah.
Yeah, maybe Steve Lyons popped into somebody's head. But all those answers would be incorrect. 41 years later, after hiring him for
Paul
the
Konerko.
First time, Paul Konerko, another very good guess.
Mark Burley?
Mark Burley.
Once again, all very good guesses. But the right answer is Tony La Russa.
Wow.
Tony La Russa is back as the skipper of the White Sox after being hired the first time 41 years ago.
Unreal.
Crazy.
How about that?
You said he's how old?
He's got to be, what, mid-70s?
Yeah, damn! 76.
76.
Wow.
Which does make him, just in case you were wondering, it does make him the oldest active manager in the league.
I don't think that was a stretch.
I don't think so. I mean, that really shocked anybody, but.
You watch interviews, and, I mean, he's been kind of an advisor for the Nashville Stars. I mean, he's very active in Major League Baseball. He has been since he last managed in 2011 with the Cardinals. But
he's consulted. He's been involved in a lot of different things. But this is amazing. There's a great picture of him in 1979 when he was hired. And at that time, he was one of the youngest managers in the game. He was younger than some of the players on his team back then. Because he was in his 30s, I think. We do the math. 1979, you said he's 76 now?
Yep.
76 minus, so he's 35. So he had some players that were older than him. Good for him. He's also in the Hall of Fame, right? That also makes him a distinction that rarely happens. you know, he retired, so he got put in the Hall of Fame, and now he goes back in and plays. They're not going to take him out of the Hall of Fame, so he's a Hall of Fame manager who's managing.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, Joe Gibbs did that in the NFL. He was already in the Hall of Fame when he came out of retirement. But here's an interesting note. Bob Nightingale put this out there. The White Sox never interviewed A.J. Hinch, who is the Tigers' number one candidate. But we had heard La Russa's name mentioned.
Yeah, it was
we've
out there.
We talked about it. Mm-hmm.
So, and they've got an intriguing group of young stars that I'm really curious to see how he shapes them. Because yeah. I think that's what they feel like. They feel like they've got the talent now, and it's only going to get better. And who's the right guy to get the most out of those guys?
You wouldn't have convinced me, the White Sox. You know how I feel about them. Same old White Sox. But with Tony La Russa hire, if they would have hired A.J. Hinch, I would have been like, yeah, dude, it's still the White Sox. I've right. watched the White Sox my whole life. It's still the White Sox. They'll find a way to mess it up. They're just one of those teams. But Tony La Russa, okay.
And you
I think
know,
that's kind of why they went there.
Right, because you know that for him to take this job, he's going to tell them, so if I get this job, I don't need your input. Get out of my way. Let me do this.
Well, and he'll have to have the same conversation as a lot of people with the analytics, right? Mm-hmm. And I think he's always been a stickler for detail, but I do think there is an old school that he has that doesn't always jive with the modern analytics. But remember, he was pretty progressive. He was one of the first that had the setup man and the setup man to the setup man, and let me get to my closer and have him start the ninth inning, right? He was very innovative with that kind of stuff, which now is old hat. So I think it's a fascinating thing. Baseball can only benefit because that's going to be something everybody's watching. And in the meantime, what does it do to Nashville with their quest, the Nashville Stars? What was he doing?
I guess there's an opening. Yes, that they have filled already. They didn't waste any time, that group. There's a vacancy filled, and they have filled his seat. Eddie George is joining the efforts to help Major League Baseball come to Nashville. That's not a joke, by the way.
No, I know. No,
Eddie George is a part of the movement for Nashville Stars to help them get MLB to Nashville.
Hey, I like it when you have stars from other sports. You know, there's some cross-pollination. I mean, we saw Magic Johnson celebrating with the Dodgers. So,
I have been saying, Darren, I think you will vouch for me. I've been saying for over a decade that the Titans, if I were the Titans, I would have hired Eddie George years ago as an ambassador, mm-hmm. as a guy that I want, as a spokesperson, as a guy representing me. And so, you can't. I mean, that's good logic by the Nashville Stars. But I continue to ask the question, though: who's doing the work every day, laying the groundwork and the foundation to try to move the ball forward here? I still don't really know.
Well, they hired Dave Dombrowski to do that, correct?
Well, yeah, but he's been rumored for other jobs.
Well,
too.
It doesn't matter. He's not rumored, but he's getting paid and he has a job here with the Nashville Stars. So he's the guy who's supposed to be doing that.
I hope so.
I think that's why they hired him. Until he gets hired, if he gets hired away, then we can have that discussion. But right now, that should be the answer.
Should be.
I mean, I think that's what it is.
The Tampa Bay Lightning, did you guys see this?
No.
Got a couple familiar names on their roster that are coming back. Luke Shen and Maroon are both coming back.
Not surprising, especially on Maroon. I know that had been out there.
Yep. Well, they've made it official.
Is Hoffman still a free agent?
Yep.
Is he just one of those in Granlin, I guess?
Yep.
Just biding their time?
Yep.
Hmm.
Still nothing.
I think there's a group of players that know they're going to be signed by somebody, but they haven't gotten the deal they wanted yet. It's almost like the Clowney.
Yeah, I was about,
right? They're
just
going
about
with
to say.
Jadeveon Clowney. So they're waiting to see if the need – they're willing to be patient and wait it out.
We have Reno on our phone line, driven by Wilson County Hyundai.com. Reno, what's up?
What's up, fellas? Hey, two things. One, I am still so pissed, and if I'm Snell and I ever see Cass again, we're fighting, literally. The other, Tony La Russa, a blast from the past from back in the 70s, and I do believe that first year they came out and he was the manager with Chet Lemon and Lou Whitaker, and they had them sweet short uniforms. Are they going to bring those back too?
They had the softball unis. Well, you're right. They did have the shorts. They had the
I think he was post shorts, but they still had those uniforms with the butterfly collars for a couple years when he got hired, and then they switched to the what everybody likes to call the softball look that they still break out every now and then. Interesting stuff.
I think they got to bust the shorts back out.
Ha! That'll be a story.
That would be a story that they need to do. Hell, they're going back to him. They're going back to his analytics, starting everything. So why not bring the shorts back? See you, boys.
All right, see ya.
Jeff Passan, very tuned
in. Interesting hire for sure.
Yeah. Speaking of that, here's Jeff Passan's take on it. The hiring of Tony La Russa has ruffled feathers in the White Sox organization. A number of employees have concerns about his ability to connect with younger players and how he will adapt to the field after being away 9 years. This was a Jerry Reinsdorf decision, simple as that. Now, that is something to think about, because when you think of his teams, I think of veteran players, right? You had some – he's had superstars, right? Those great teams with the A's had Ricky Henderson, and they had, Dave Stewart and Canseco and McGuire. But, man, he really loved the cagey veterans to round out the roster. Same thing with St. Louis. He had Jim Edmonds, and he brought in Larry Walker later in his career. Those kind of guys. The White Sox are anything but that, right? They might could use a couple of those guys, and I'm curious to see if they go get a couple Tony La Russa type players. But he's going to have to connect with some really talented but still kind of raw guys on that team. They have some immense talents, but they need to be honed. But that's going to be the key, is can Tony La Russa do it? Can he be patient enough to do it as they mature? Evidently, some people don't think so.
But isn't that so typical White? That's what we're getting at. Typical White Sox. There you go. So they just hired Tony La Russa, and we're going, whoa. And then you get a report. Yeah, they were going whoa for a lot of wrong reasons. In the White Sox organization, they were going, whoa, or were they saying, no? It's a prime example. Just the owner just going, yeah, you know what? I'm the owner. I got you guys, but I'm just going to do what I want to do. It may end up working out and being a smart move, but if you've got a lot of people below the ownership group, a lot of people in the front office in the organization that aren't exactly on board, that's probably not a good start. That's probably not what you're looking for, where you've got all kinds of grumbling going on behind the scenes, like already people question it before he's even stepped foot into the building. That's probably not a good start. And like I said, that's just typical White Sox manner. That's how the White Sox operate. It's one step forward, two steps back. It seems like they're never on the same page. It's just a matter of time before something goes awry.
Well, I think the big thing to watch here is going to be who all is on his staff. Who's the bench coach, who's the pitching coach, hitting coach, analytics. You brought up Willie. How much is he going to listen to that or have anything to do with that? I think who he puts on that staff is going to be what to pay attention to, because he's been out for so long. I mean, I think that's one thing you saw with John Gruden and with the Raiders, is he tried to bring in some people that had, could help him adapt from how it was when he left, when he went to the TV booth. I mean, he even hired, was it Jerry Austin, who had been with him on Monday Night Football as an official, to kind of help with the rules. So, is La Russa going to do that, or is he going to just be like, it's baseball, hadn't changed, even though we know it has?
Very, very interesting. Tony La Russa back after 41 years as the White Sox skipper. All right, we need an update. A lot of people have weighed in on Kelly and whether Kelly was found guilty or found not guilty. Was there a ruling in the Donick household on whether Kelly ate your sandwich or not? There's been video evidence, but it's hard to tell. I mean, I didn't see any crumbs by Kelly. I didn't see, like, any mayonnaise or mustard on the side of Kelly's face. I mean, there was, other than just the wagging of the tail, I'm not sure the video showed us much. It was very inconclusive, in my opinion. So what happened? What's the latest on Kelly?
Well, you might recall a few months ago we had a similar situation with Stanley where he knocked over a vase, allegedly, right? And Nash came to his defense. There was a lot of circumstantial evidence, right? A lot of circumstantial evidence, but no firsthand eyewitness account, right? They weren't caught in the act.
No conviction?
Well, so I guess they have a very good defense attorney. I did not see it. I had to testify that I did not visually see Kelly eat my sandwich yesterday. My dog, she snuck in. I had the headphones on. I was very very focused on the show, as I should be, being a professional that I am. And right behind my back, literally, the sandwich was gone. No trace. Like you said, Darren, there was no fingerprints. There were no crumbs.
Nope.
So it's all it is right now. The update is just very simply, it's alleged, and there has not been a conviction yet. But I suspect I know who it was.
So it's still an open. It's
an open
case.
It's still pending.
It's an open case right now.
Pending.
Maybe a week from now it'll be considered a cold case if you still haven't gotten any further.
Yeah, it could be a hung jury.
The testimony, though. I mean, Kelly was very, very silent, but
she
said a lot.
She took the fifth.
She stuck to her guns and, like, just sat there and looked at him.
The
like,
tail
yeah.
wag, though, yeah. is, I question the tail wag.
The stance where she's laying down is I just ate a hell of a meal and I'm ready to take a nap. I think that's pretty telling in itself. If we can come to a conclusion, you might have to hang up the badge.
But that is not enough to convict, I don't think. I mean, that's circumstantial, right? I mean, that's us drawing a conclusion with no evidence. That's just looking at
something and saying,
you look like
evidence.
You're fat, happy, and you're ready for a nap. Maybe you feel that way after eating a sandwich. But we don't really know.
We can't know, but there's a lot of circumstantial evidence that would point to Kelly. Stanley was sequestered in the bedroom upstairs. Couldn't have been him. Because he has a criminal record.
He does. He's got a track record.
He's got a track record. So, but that's a suspect that was out of the picture. Clyde was in his little sleeping crib. He had that all to himself. So he was out of the picture. So there's only, unless it was Aaron who made the sandwich for me, or me, that there's nobody else in the house. So it's got to be either Aaron or Kelly.
Unless
I don't think
it
was Aaron.
Twisting her paws and try to get her to admit it. If you guys don't have like a Ring video, you know, a Ring
no,
camera somewhere.
No, we don't have any surveillance. We have no surveillance.
If there's no surveillance, I think you guys are, you're toast. You're not going to be able to nail her for this.
Nope.
You could try to pin it on her, but it's not going to be enough. They're not even going to press charges, I don't think.
This alleged incident, did this take place while you were on the air or were we in break?
It was while we were on the air.
Elijah, and do you remember the time that this took place? We might have to listen for auditory evidence.
This might be the only evidence we have from the sound of it. We're not very good at collecting evidence here.
I mean, does she have a collar? Could the collar have hit the desk? Could you hear something like that?
It's possible.
Maybe.
Does she have a collar that you can clangs back and forth, you know, where you can hear it if it hits something?
Yeah, a little bit, but not that loud, and I had the headphones on, so I certainly didn't hear anything, but I guess our microphones could have picked up something. It's possible.
Hmm. It's going to be tough.
Let's go back and listen to the podcast.
We're grasping at straws. I think Kelly's going to
She's going to walk.
Kelly's going to get – there's right now, there's no way the DA is going to be able to press charges. No chance.
We have a text on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Make another sandwich and set her up.
Isn't that entrapment?
That's entrapment.
Entrapment.
Yeah.
That's
illegal. That's against the law.
A good attorney will jump all over that.
That will get thrown out. No chance you can enter that into evidence. No chance. Yeah, that won't work.
And double jeopardy comes into play.
Can you tell we watch a lot of shows about the law, a lot of police shows? I used to love Boston Legal. I like Blue Bloods. Yeah, we've watched a lot of CSI. We've watched a lot of police shows, Law and Order.
Have you guys watched Lucifer at all?
No.
It's on Netflix. It's there's obviously other things involved in it, but it's a crime show too.
I've admitted.
Recommend it?
I recommend it. Yeah, it's good.
Since sports came back, nothing to say. I have not. It's not like I'm boycotting. I have not watched anything on Netflix since sports came
back. Yeah, I sort of took a break too, but I'm coming back now that there's less sports on.
Yeah, I know. Like last night, I'm going, should I be like figuring out something else? Because it was not. We're back to sports hell, right? Nothing. Nothing going on.
On non-football nights.
Yep.
And non-soccer, right? You got to jump on the Nashville SC train here, but other than that, it's going to be a little light until hoops start. Hopefully hoops will start.
I did watch the race because they finally finished that.
I looked for it and looked for it. What was it on and when did it start? Because I looked for it and couldn't find it.
Started about 4 o'clock on NBCSN.
Oh, I had missed it. Okay, and so when I started looking for it, it was already done.
The streak continues. Kyle Busch, 16 years in a row, he's won a race.
And tonight, I mean, does it get any sweeter than Panthers and Falcons football? I mean, hello.
Well, actually,
Carolina,
no, I will watch.
And Atlanta? I mean, your buddy,
Teddy B. I will watch.
Teddy B. Love Fest for Chase.
Yeah. And this could be the last hurrah, Chase, since we were shrewd enough. We lost Saquon Barkley.
We did.
On our fantasy team. And we did get Mike Davis. But his days are numbered. Because McCaffrey is going to be back, so we need to cherish our last moments with Mike Davis being the featured running back.
Which will probably work in your favor because he's been kind of quiet lately, and he'll probably bust out because he knows his job is about to be taken.
Well, we'll take anything because if you know, I don't think we're the only team, but running backs are increasingly hard to find with all the key ones that are hurt. A lot of them split duty anyway. I would imagine in fantasy football right now, if you've got, you know, running backs that you count on every week, you're probably doing pretty well because it's not very deep.
Nope. We will come back and touch a little bit to close out Thursday's show on what Mike Vrabel had to say about this week in preparation for Cincinnati. We'll do that on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN, 102.5 The Game.
This is the end, beautiful friend. This is the end, my only friend, the end.
It's not the end just yet. We started off the hour talking or listening to Titans head coach Mike Vrabel talk about their next matchup, the Cincinnati Bengals, as they hit the field today to get ready for their next opponent. So, Willie, I'm going to start with you. What jumped out to you, anything stand out in what Mike Vrabel said today? Is a little bit more talkative than we've heard earlier.
He was. He even admitted he was in a good move, but only for today.
Yeah.
So, two things that he hit on. Number one, there was a question about Khalif Raymond and his attitude when he's back there returning the kicks. They love Khalif Raymond. There's no question. But in the big picture, you know, I love to reference Football Outsiders. They are 31st. In overall special teams. And that is very unlike the Titans, who I think pride themselves on special teams. They've had some very good special teams games. The case in point would be the Bills. But it's been really feast or famine, right? Special teams has really let them down in a couple of the games. So it's not just Guskowski, but it's everything around the special teams. Guskowski would help it a lot if he comes around. But all of those things, Mike Vrabel really puts a value on those things. But I didn't get a sense that they're making a change at all with Raymond. They love him. And then the other big part was you could tell he has done a lot of thinking and talking about his defense, particularly on third down. And the word that jumps out at me is we're close. But he said, but that doesn't mean anything until you do anything. Close gets you nowhere in football. Right, you can't just say, "Coach," but I was right there. I had good coverage. I was close. I almost tipped it, or I almost made the tackle.
Clowney could say that every week,
right? So, they've had a lot of discussions about the detail and things like that. But I continue to believe that they will do better in those things. And it was our theme with Floyd, right? They don't have to be a great defense. Their offense is such that if you're just a decent defense, you're going to win a lot of games because the offense will be enough.
Yeah, and I thought that Floyd's the back and forth that Floyd had with Jason Fitch yesterday on their show about that of, okay, defenses are kind of down this year anyway, that if you can just be good enough, the offense can carry it the rest of the way. I go back to something that we talked about earlier this week, playing a team like Cincinnati. If you can get on them early, if you can make some big defensive plays, get to Joe Burrow, and just have one of those confidence-building type games, what does that do? It's all, you know, I mean, there's so much of it is psychology, too, of, all right, how do you react out of after a loss? You haven't lost a game this year until this point. It was a close game, so how do you react from that? Do you have a little more, you know, determination going into this one? If they get to the court, if they get to Joe Burrow early, you know, does that spark the rest of the defense? I mean, these are all questions that can only be answered in time, but I certainly am curious of how much of that is going to affect the defense moving forward. And on the flip side, we also talked about this. What if they don't get to Joe Burrow? What if they once again go, you know, and they don't register a sack, whether it's Clowney or anybody? What does that do? Does that just, you know, dig you into a deeper hole of what do we got to do here? I think they're both
in play. We also got to see who practices, right? When you looked at that practice list of who didn't practice yesterday, you're like, whoa, that's a pretty
typically
significant
Wednesday
group.
Yeah. That happens.
You don't panic on Wednesday, for sure.
Friday is the day. That's honestly Wednesday and Thursday, what's going on. Friday is the day when you start panicking on where guys are. And if they're not out there on Friday, more than likely they're not going to be out there on Sunday. Something that jumped out at me is something that I've brought up many times on the show is how they're not calling the holding calls in the league. And Mike Vrabel actually referenced it with numbers. He said there were 732 holding penalties last season in the league. 732, and this is week 7? What are we going into the NFL season? Week 7, is that right, or week 8?
Week 8.
This is week 8. Now, the 732 is for the full season and playoffs last year. So it is not apples to apples. It's not after 8 weeks, but 732 called for the season. But even
did he
say
and playoffs?
Yes.
Okay, I didn't remember.
In fact,
I
thought it was interesting that he did this because he almost never does this, but he introduced it when he didn't have to, right? Yeah. He had been asked the question before, but it makes you think he kind of wants that out there. Now, it's a double-edged sword because his offense is clicking. You wouldn't want to all of a sudden get a bunch of holding penalties called against your offense.
No, but there's a reason why. Okay, there's a reason why he's so wanting to put this out there because there's only been 188. I've brought this up in the past when we were talking on why the Titans cannot get to the quarterback, and I said, well, one, it could be contributed to the fact that they're not calling holding penalties on the offense. And here's a prime example of a coach that may be going, see? In other words, I'm not saying it, but they may be letting some offensive linemen get away with holding our guys, and maybe they would be getting to the quarterbacks if they were called holding a little bit more. Like I said, I'm not saying he's saying that,
right?
But I think there's a reason he wants that out there.
He's a defensive mind.
They're under attack. They're not getting to the quarterback. They're not getting off the field on third downs, and he's trying to defend his side of the ball, and that's a great stat to do it.
So even if, you know, you double, if they doubled it on the pace, you'd still say you're going to come up way short. Even if, you know, I'm not a math genius here doing it, but of course, 188 getting close to the halfway point, 732 for the year last year. So let's say it ends up being 400 or 500. You're still a couple hundred less holding calls for a season. That's a significant. The question is why. Is it because the league wants to see more offense? Is it because they think it's more entertaining under the circumstances with no fans? We want crazier games. I saw a stat last week. It was the Jimmy Shapiro. And I was thinking about it as the Titans were down 27-7. And up until last week, there had been a team behind by 16 points in the game every week that had won. every single week. And the Titans were down 20 and had a field goal to tie. So lead changes and comebacks, that's exciting. Is calling less holding contributing to that?
I would say yes.
So do you think it's a let them play thing from the league, from the top?
I think they want less. I think overall.
They would never admit it, right?
No, but I think overall we've said at times, like, just keep your, you know, there's too many penalties being called. We've always said it, right? We've
As
always
a
said
fan,
you can call holding on every play. So maybe this, to me, it is more appealing to not have the game slow down forever by penalty after penalty after penalty. In other words, let them play a little bit more. And it creates more excitement, like you said. Less calls being made, more excitement, more scoring. I think that's a win-win for the league.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That'll do it for today's show. We'll be back tomorrow to wrap up the week. You have a great rest of your day. Be safe. We'll see you Friday morning at 10 a.m. Closing time. Turn all of the lights on over every boy and every girl. Closing time.